Chapter 10. Jeff eased the Camaro to a halt along Hillside Drive and snuffed the radio volume with the engine quietly idling. The sun glinted in his eyes as he studied the empty driveway of the Wellis residence ahead on the left. Eager to pick Cindy up and get rolling, but respectful of her instructions to keep back. He donned his sunglasses and pulled his ball cap down over his eyes, slinking low against his door as the driver of a passing vehicle ogled his car, remaining motionless until the man finally drove away. A 3-hour wait at various hiding spots around town had taken a toll on his nerves, prompting him to wonder if the time might have been better spent on the open road, putting distance between him and the town of Salisbury. "Come on, Cindy, hurry up," he said with a nervous tap on the steering wheel. Finally, he spotted her stepping out the front door of the house. He shifted into first gear, but kept the clutch disengaged, waiting until she neared the top of the rising driveway before driving forward. She stopped at the curb and waved. Then she pulled a white windbreaker over her saffron sweater, while he pulled the car to a stop a few feet away from her. She ran around the front to the passenger side, popping the door open and plopping breathlessly onto the open seat before shutting the door and leaning over to kiss him.
"Hi."
"Hi." He leaned toward her, but the bill of his cap struck her in the forehead, so he pulled it from his head and tossed it in the back seat. "Sorry," he said before completing the kiss. She smiled and settled back in the seat.
"That's okay."
He shifted into gear and drove forward. "I hate picking you up like this."
"I know. But I appreciate it."
She turned to him with a wide smile and excitedly asked,
"So, where do you want to go?"
He eyed her coyly. "I don't know. Got anything in mind?" Her eyes twinkled mischievously as she pulled a keychain from her pocket.
"I sure do."
"What are those for?"
"The boathouse. Let's take the boat out."
Jeff glanced uneasily in his rearview mirror as he accelerated away from her house. "Oh, I don't know, Cindy. It sounds complicated."
"Only if you consider a half-hour ride to fly on a rocket ship across a clear blue lake complicated."
She slapped him on the knee.
"Come on, Jeff. You said yourself that you've never been on a motorboat. My father's gonna dry dock it next weekend, and then it'll be too late."
He frowned. "It'll be dark in an hour."
"Even better. We can watch the sunset."
She squeezed his hand.
"Unless you're still afraid of the dark."
Jeff cracked a weak smile. Riding on a boat wasn't part of the plan, but if it got them out of Salisbury and gave him a quiet moment to plead his case to her, then it was as good an idea as any. There was so much to say and so much to ask, but a starlit vista over a secluded lake might provide the perfect milieu for a monumental proposal. "Okay, you win. What's the fastest way from here?" She settled back smugly into her seat and fastened her seatbelt.
"Get on the highway and take exit 9.
He steered the Camaro down the winding course of Hillside Drive until it intersected with Archer Road, a long rural road that ran from Arrow Drive along the outskirts of town. After turning left, they continued another half mile down its gradual slope until it passed over the crest of a ridge and plummeted toward a traffic light half a mile down the hill. The light changed to green as they approached it, permitting Jeff to freely turn the car left onto Route 53, a thoroughfare out of Salisbury. He accelerated along the state road toward an entrance ramp to the interstate highway, still more than a mile away. Straining to think of a topic less weighty than his pending flight from town. "So, how did the basketball tryouts go?"
"Awesome. I think I made the team. The coach really likes me."
His heart sank a little. For every tie she felt to Salisbury lessened the chance he could convince her to go with him. "TJ has tryouts tomorrow. He'll probably make the varsity team."
"You should try out. You're in good shape. It'd give you something constructive to do."
He frowned. "You sound like my mother." She fell silent for a moment.
"Have you officially dropped out of school yet?"
"Officially? Like stand up in the auditorium and publicly denounce Salisbury High?" He smiled at the notion. "No, I'm just not going to go anymore."
"Oh."
She pointed a thumb at the bulging gym bag and backpack in the back seat.
"Going on vacation?"
she asked with a subtle bite in her voice. He rued his failure to place the bags in the trunk. I'm going hiking with Mick this weekend.
Sounds like fun.
He knew that she sensed his dishonesty, but the time wasn't ripe for the truth yet. He turned the Camaro onto the highway entrance ramp and then stomped on the gas pedal, throwing them back in their seats as the engine roared and the car swiftly accelerated. She shifted in her seat, but she seemed to enjoy the powerful car, so he turned up the volume on the radio again, hoping to avoid further conversation about his future, at least until they were settled somewhere quieter. They neared exit 9, several miles down the road, marked by a yellow caution sign warning of a tight circular turn ahead. Jeff lifted his foot off the gas as he drove up the spiral ramp, glancing to his right as he neared the top to spot a dark pickup truck entering the exit lane below. He dwelled upon the truck for a moment too long and slammed on the brakes when he realized they were about to roll through the stop sign into the adjacent road. Cindy lurched forward in her seat from the abrupt halt. Her seatbelt snapped taut against her shoulder, and she instinctively braced a hand against the dashboard.
Jeff!
Which way? He asked urgently.
Left. What's wrong?
He turned onto the main road. That pickup truck behind us. What color is it? She turned her head to see.
I don't know. Black? Green? It's hard to tell in this light.
Good enough for me. He hit the gas as she continued to peer out the back window.
He's at the stop sign. He's turning this way.
A busy intersection lay ahead and the traffic light was red. He tugged at her sleeve. Which way? She pointed to the left.
Dexter Road.
He tried to identify the occupants of the approaching truck, still three cars behind them, but all he could distinguish was the glimmer of a single headlight in the advancing sunset. A green arrow flashed overhead, but a slow car prevented him from cornering through the intersection at optimum speed. Jeff drove the Camaro close to the sluggish sedan's bumper as the arrow quickly turned to yellow. Move it, he growled at the car. The truck closed in swiftly behind them, but instead of following them onto Dexter Road, it continued straight through the intersection. Cindy watched it drive away before patting him gently on the knee.
A little paranoid, aren't we?
Jeff shuddered. Better paranoid than dead. That looked like Curly's truck.
He's still running around? Shouldn't he be in jail by now?
He laughed. You tell me. Your father's the chief of police. She shrugged.
Maybe he needs more evidence.
Maybe he doesn't give a shit, he shot back. She sighed.
My father's not the monster you think he is, Jeff. Maybe if you told him what you know, then—
I don't talk to cops, he said curtly. She drew back and folded her hands in her lap. Way to butter her up, he thought. A half mile down the road, she pointed to an intersection on the right, across from a street lamp powering up in the dusk.
Turn here,
she said tersely. He spotted the turnoff to Portland Village Road and slowed the car for the upcoming turn. To his relief, the slow car in front continued past the intersection, offering a clear road ahead after the turn. Moments later, they were coasting over the top of a small rise and onto a straight stretch of road that split a dusty field of broken corn stalks in half. Jeff pointed to a rugged dirt road that bordered the adjacent woods, noting how it vanished over a hilltop toward the street that the pickup truck had taken. I bet a truck could cut through there with no problem.
Jeff, you're scaring me.
He patted her knee. Sorry, I'm just being paranoid. How far to the boathouse?
Not far, a few more miles.
He pressed the gas pedal closer to the floorboard as the cornfields gave way to woodlands. The road began to wind along the rising terrain as they crossed the Portland Town line marker. Not long afterward, Cindy reached over and squeezed his hand again. What's wrong?
Lifestar Lane, remember?
He had forgotten and let off the gas in a hurry. The road rose to a crest at the corner of the hairpin turn and dropped out of view behind the steep embankment of Badger Mountain to the left. Tires squealed against the pavement as he struggled to keep the fenders off the guardrail with the low orange sun shining brightly against his sunglasses. He groped for the visor as he blindly steered to the left, but the road suddenly dipped into the shade of the rolling hills to ease the glare upon his eyes. He shuddered. Not much of a guardrail. She nestled closer.
But you gotta love the view.
Darkness had hidden the landscape from Jeff on their first trip to Almond Lake, but as he drove down the backside of the pass, he saw the valley below in the full splendor of an autumnal sunset. A babbling stream gurgled about mossy rocks as it flowed beneath a wooden bridge a half mile away, while beyond the bridge, the cozy cottages of Portland Village basked in the glow of cirrus clouds stroked with shades of indigo and crimson. Acres of maples and pines rolled toward a distant horizon, sporadically dissected by winding gray country roads that were swiftly swallowed up by a blanket of colored foliage. Jeff pointed toward the lakeside village. Is that where you lived?
No, our house was near the center of town. That's where the boat lives.
I didn't notice any of this the first time we came, he said. It gets so dark out this way.
Yeah, but if it's clear, you can see a billion stars.
She leaned closer to the windshield and peered upward.
I think we'll see some stars tonight.
The road curved to the right in a wide arc along the rock wall as it descended into the valley, straightening and leveling as it approached the gentle bump of the wooden bridge. Jeff slowed the car as they crossed the bridge, his eyes shaded from the sun's low angle by a multitude of trees lining the banks of the brook. Soon, the road curled to the left, revealing a familiar intersection set among a clearing of trees a quarter mile ahead. Didn't we turn? Cindy nodded.
Quarry Road. Keep going straight.
He laughed. I get it. Take him to the public dock on the first date. Don't let him see where you really live. She grinned.
If you were a total dork, I might have left you there.
He eyed her with playful distrust as they continued past the Quarry Road intersection. Soon he could see, between the pine trees, sparkles of sunlight glistening off the dark blue waters of Almond Lake. The soft glow of electric lights exposed cottages that had been indiscernible from the hilltop pass 2 miles back. And every 50 yards or so, a dirt driveway branched from the paved road, winding through the trees toward a waterfront that was still not visible. After a dozen such driveways, he spotted a carved wooden sign that read, Wellis, nailed to a thick tree.
Turn here. Be careful. The road's pretty narrow.
The car lurched as Jeff turned onto the craggy road. He pulled off his sunglasses and switched on the headlights beneath the cover of the trees. Hardy pines littered the road with large pine cones and gnarly roots that bounced and rocked the Camaro as he inched it along. Let me know if anything falls off my car. She laughed.
What's the matter? City Mouse doesn't like the country.
He shook his head. City Mouse doesn't like shelling out cheese for auto parts. She nestled closer again.
Don't worry. Country Mouse has plenty of cheese.
Jeff raised an eyebrow at her subtle offer of aid. But moreover, he despised the need for it in the first place. He thought it ironic that his mother would pull all support from him, while a girl he had only met a few short weeks ago would offer it freely to him. Soon, the dirt road turned to the right and ended in a square gravel driveway, blanketed with leaves and pine needles. An A-frame cottage stood dark upon a gentle slope overlooking the driveway, its tall front windows facing a grassy clearing that descended toward the lapping waters of the lake. Jeff braked the car to a rugged halt and shifted into reverse, backing aggressively to the edge of the driveway before cutting the motor off. Always be ready for a quick getaway, he said with a wink. She climbed out of the car.
Follow me.
He stepped out and locked the car shut. Who lives here?
My grandparents. They're snowbirds, though. They're off down south at the first sign of frost.
She smiled furtively at him.
I know what you're thinking, but I don't have the key.
Jeff pocketed his keys and glanced back to the Camaro. I wasn't thinking that at all. I'm just worried about the car. He winced, realizing just how dumb his words had sounded the moment they escaped his lips. She laughed again.
You weren't thinking that at all? What's the matter? You don't like girls?
He grinned and lunged for her wrist. Come here. She screamed and ran teasingly across the driveway to a grassy clearing with her white jacket flapping in the breeze. He chased after her and caught her halfway down the slope, tackling her by the waist and breaking her fall with his own body. Lying on her back, she squirmed in token resistance as he pinned her hands to the ground over her head. But when he tried to kiss her lips, she burst into laughter again, startling him. Frustrated, he released her and rolled onto his back in the grass, exhaling a long sigh before propping himself up on his elbows. She crept up to him and kissed his cheek, her lips as soft upon his skin as the warm shades of sunset upon his eyes. Across the lake, falling maple and oak leaves wafted in a light breeze above the shimmering water, while the evening stars shone brightly in the early November sky. "It's beautiful here. No wonder you wanted to come." She sprang to her feet and tugged at his hands.
"Come on, it's better on the boat."
He barely stood up before she released his hands to run off down the hill toward the water, where the grassy slope led to a set of gray slate steps intersecting a well-worn footpath that traced the perimeter of the lake. The trail circled behind a gray boathouse, while the slate steps continued down to a red door on the side of the windowless structure. By the time he caught up with her, she was standing at the door, fumbling to insert a key into a brass doorknob.
"I hate this stupid lock."
Jeff took the key from her hand. "Allow me." He guided the key along his forefinger into the slot, twisting the key to the left while jiggling the doorknob to the right. And the door promptly popped open. Raising an index finger in the air, he said in his best French accent, "Behold the cat burglar magnifique!" He pushed the door open and boldly entered the black space with a hand groping into the darkness, only to whack his right knee on the corner of a low, sturdy post 2 steps inside the boathouse. "Ow!" he groaned. Cindy slipped inside and pulled down on a dangling string. An overhead fluorescent lamp flicked to life to reveal Jeff cradling his knee in pain. She smirked and raised her own finger into the air.
"Le cambrioleur, c'est congélé le genou."
Jeff fell back against the object of his discomfort, a workbench running the length of the rear wall. "I have no idea what you just said, but you're asking for a swim."
"Do you know how to swim?"
She took the keys from him and pointed to a pair of orange life jackets hanging from a pegboard wall behind her.
"Last chance to confess if you don't."
"I said I've never been on a motorboat. I didn't say I've never been in the water." He nodded to a dark green canoe hanging on the opposite wall. "That's more my speed, though." Cindy laughed.
"Do you want to exercise or do you want to have fun?"
She stepped down to a gray horseshoe dock surrounding a white-hulled cuddy cabin moored with its bow facing a large aluminum garage door. At the far end of the dock, she unraveled a pulley chain from a wall bracket and pulled it down to raise the metal door, slowly revealing the waters of the lake. A cool breeze rushed inside the boathouse, tousling her jacket and hair, while the motorboat danced upon choppy waves like an excited puppy waiting to be let out. She balanced herself with a hand on the windshield frame before hopping down onto the deck, sliding into the captain's chair with the keys in hand. The inboard motors gurgled to life a moment later, and she moved methodically about the cockpit, unraveling the mooring ropes from the boat's hitches. "Can I help?" She ran her fingers along the dewy vinyl of the chair and pointed to the workbench behind him.
"Toss me that towel."
"Aye, aye, Captain." He turned about and pulled a white towel from the cluttered workbench, tipping over an empty beer bottle that rolled swiftly toward the edge. He lunged for it, but only managed to tip the bottle with his fingertips, cringing as he expected it to smash on the dock. Instead, it rattled to a rest upon the hard wood without breaking. Relieved, he picked up the bottle from the dock and set it beside a gas can at the back of the workbench. "Phew, that was close." Cindy rolled her eyes.
"Geez, you're not even in the boat yet. Come on, hop in. Help me keep the boat off the dock while I drive out."
He lobbed the towel to her and clambered over the port side of the boat, while she quickly wiped down the vinyl seats before tossing the towel back onto the dock. She slid into the captain's chair and shifted the boat into drive, easing the throttle back and steering the boat out of the boathouse. Once the bow cleared the dock, she turned the steering wheel aport, churning through the water at minimum speed until Jeff moved forward to sit on the edge of the other swivel chair. "So, how fast does this thing go?" he asked. She grinned and pulled hard on the throttle, thrusting him back into his seat. He groped for a hold to steady himself as the bow of the craft rose high in the air and the boat wash gurgled violently behind them. Soon the hull leveled out, setting the boat on a swift eastward course, bouncing across the still water with the last shards of violet from the late sunset streaking across the sky. "This is awesome!" he shouted above the roar of the wind. She flashed a smile at him, the same smile that had captivated him in the dark hallways of the Salisbury Public Safety Complex nearly 2 weeks ago. Somehow, even burglary seemed strangely innocent back then, a time without friends in coffins or blood on his hands. He felt the persistent knot in his stomach ease a bit, comforted by the thought that not everything had changed. Every time he saw her, he longed to see her smile, for the curl of her lips and gleam in her eye disclosed a certain pureness of her soul. Here he sat, racing along the deep blue waters of Almond Lake, with the cool wind rushing through his hair, a fugitive with 1 foot turned toward the open road. Yet all that truly mattered to him was her shining smile and cavernous brown eyes. He gazed out across the still waters of the lake, knowing he must truly be insane. The last sliver of sunlight vanished behind the treetops as more stars dotted the sky. Cindy pursued the same easterly course they had followed since departing the boathouse, despite the murky masses of evergreen trees looming ahead. Her calm demeanor suggested no concern for the approaching shore, but in Jeff's own inexpert opinion, they were swiftly nearing a point of no return. "We're running out of water," he yelled over the rush of the wind.
"Want to check out the cliffs?"
she hollered back.
"They're kind of spooky at night."
"Whatever you want, just don't kill me," she laughed.
"Relax, I know this lake like the back of my hand."
She cut the throttle and eased the boat in a wide starboard arc less than 100 feet from the shore. Suddenly, she jerked the wheel hard a port and then quickly steered back to the right, even closer to the southern bank. Jeff clung to his seat and glanced over his shoulder to glimpse a large gray rock protruding just a few feet above the surface, barely visible in the low light. "Back of your hand, huh?" he asked with wide eyes. She turned back toward the open waters.
"Don't worry, you wouldn't have felt a thing."
With no visible coves or inlets breaking its shorelines, Almond Lake resembled a teardrop or, as its name suggested, an almond. As they chased the final glimmer of sunlight down the center line of the lake, Jeff spotted the Wellis boathouse amid the glowing porch lights along the southern shore, but he found the dark outline of the northern shore far more alluring. They sped closer to the public boat launch at the westernmost point of the lake, where the terrain rose steadily off the starboard side, toward a dark peak only slightly discernible against the deep violet sky of the daylight's final moments. The lake seemed sunken into the ground beneath the high banks of its northwest corner, with a stretch of its northern shore consisting of a towering rock wall. Cindy pulled the throttle back and turned the wheel to let the bow pivot slowly toward the cliff. Jeff gazed up at the cliff. "Wow, that's cool. Ever jump off it?"
"No way. The water's too shallow there. It's private property anyway. The mining company owns it."
She pointed over the starboard rail.
"See that beach at the bottom of the cliff?"
He squinted, but all he could see was the dark mass of the cliff. "No." She pulled a searchlight from its bracket on the windshield frame and flicked a toggle switch on the dash. A powerful beam of light sliced through the darkness and followed the craggy rock wall at her direction, down to a secluded sandy beach dotted with large, flat rocks at the base of the cliff.
"That was our favorite spot. My friends and I used to anchor right here and swim out to the beach. We'd lie out on the rocks for hours and work on our tans. The sand is nice and firm." and the sun hits just right in the early afternoon.
She turned to him with a forlorn look in her eyes.
Not this year, though. I haven't seen any of them since we moved, except for Shannon.
You don't like Salisbury much?
Not really. There's only one good thing that's come from moving there.
What's that?
Meeting you.
At last, they had arrived at the perfect milieu, a place in the world that was dearest to her heart. He stood up and stepped toward her as if he was going to embrace her, but instead he reached for the dashboard and shut off the spotlight, returning them to the comfort of darkness. He kissed her on the forehead and gestured to the padded bench seat astern. "Let's sit back there. There's something I need to tell you." She nodded and zipped up her windbreaker.
"It's a little breezy. I'm going to drop the anchor so we don't drift."
He nodded and stepped aft to the bench seat, plopping down on its white cushion as she powered the anchor down by an electric winch. When she finished, she shut the engine off and joined him at the stern, falling on the seat beside him.
"So, what did you want to tell me?"
she asked breathlessly. Jeff swallowed against the lump in his throat and stretched an arm behind her shoulders. I know we've only been together for a couple of weeks, and I don't want to scare you by using the L word."
"The L word?"
She pulled back and narrowed her eyes at him.
"Are you saying you have lice?"
He laughed and drew her closer to him. She did that so easily, he thought. Take his awkward moment and kill it with her wit and cheer. Cradling her in his arms under the stars with the water lapping gently against the stern of the boat, he felt like Jeff Hollister, the gang leader, was light years away, and that he was everything he wanted to be. Just a guy holding his girl on a beautiful starlit night. Her methods were mysterious to him, but somehow she found a way to cut through all his pretenses and connect with the truer nature of his heart. She wrapped her fingers between his.
"Your hands are warm."
"Your hands are cold." For a moment, they seemed to sense themselves for what they were, two captives of their own worlds, each clinging to the other as the repelling forces of their spinning orbs worked to tear them apart. "This place is fantastic. I hope you don't get in trouble for taking the boat out."
"It's no big deal. Although my father wouldn't be happy if he knew."
"You mean if he knew who you were with?" She shrugged.
"You're right. But he'll come around. You'll see. He's just got an impression in his mind about you. When he gets to know you, he'll like you. Trust me."
He laughed in disbelief. "That's never gonna happen."
"Why not? You could work out your personal differences with him, couldn't you?"
She ran her fingers through his hair.
"If it meant being with me?"
His stomach churned too much to sit still. He stood up and buried his hands in the pockets of his vest. "I'm not talking about personal differences, Cindy. I'm talking about things we do that we can't take back. Things that change our lives forever." She eyed him cautiously.
"Why? What did you do?"
"I quit the gang."
"Really? That's great! I mean..."
Her initial glee faded to puzzlement.
"But your friends... Mick... I thought you were going hiking."
He searched for words. "After I left you last night, I went to the fight. I had to. And I got... involved." She turned her eyes down.
"What do you mean by involved?"
He felt as if his tongue was glued to the roof of his mouth. "You know that kid who got stabbed?"
"Oh no! You did that?"
"It was an accident," he explained quickly. He gazed up at the sky as he gathered his thoughts. "Curly was gonna shoot Mick. I thought I was gonna lose another friend. I knocked the gun away and he pulled a knife on me. I had to defend myself, so I pulled mine. Happy Jack jumped in, and we all went down in a pile. It happened so fast." He turned to look straight into her eyes. "I didn't mean to do it, Cindy. I wasn't looking to hurt anyone. You gotta believe me. She sat silently for a long moment as he squirmed.
I do believe you. But what are you going to do now?
He turned to face the breeze rolling in from the western shore. I'm leaving town tomorrow. I'm going to California. I'm not going to stay here to get thrown in jail or let some tornado put a bullet in my head.
No, Jeff. Talk to my father. Tell him what you told me. If you run, you'll just make things worse.
How can things be worse? I've lost all my friends. I'm kicked out of my house. I can't go back to school. I can't even show my face around town anymore. And there's a lunatic out there who's hell-bent on killing me. He backed up against his swivel chair. My freedom is all I have left. If I go to your father, I can kiss that goodbye too. Cindy rose from the bench and leaned back against the starboard rail.
Think about that, Jeff. Think about living under an alias. Think about breaking into a sweat every time you see a police car. Or never being able to come home.
She bowed her head and wiped an eye.
Think about us never being together again.
Jeff stepped close to her and gazed up at the brilliant sky. When I was 9 or 10, I used to sit outside and look up at the stars like this. I'd dream about my future and what my life might become. After my father died, I stopped thinking about those things. He kissed her softly on the cheek. You said it yourself. There's a whole world waiting for me out there. I know it looks like I'm running away, but it feels like I'm running to something better. At least I gotta try. She looked away.
Then, I guess this is goodbye.
He took her hands and pulled them close to his chest, for the moment was upon him. It doesn't have to be like that, Cindy. We could do this together. He touched his forehead to hers. Come with me. Please. I need you. I'm crazy about you.
California? Are you serious?
Her pupils darted from side to side as she considered the proposition.
Where would we stay? How would we get by?
My brother owns an auto body shop. He'll give me a job. I can make good money.
But what about school? What would I tell my friends? And my parents? They'd be worried sick.
Her objections rolled off her tongue faster than he could digest them. He cast his eyes downward. Look, it was just a crazy idea. She rested her hand on his shoulder.
Don't say that. I didn't say no. You know I want to be with you, but it's a big decision. You're not giving me much time. Be fair to me.
He backed up a half step. You're right. I'm not being fair.
Maybe next summer. After graduation. It's only 6 months. We could stay in touch until then. It wouldn't be so bad.
He dropped his head. Sure. We'll keep in touch. We'll write letters. The evening breeze suddenly felt chillier, and he wished they weren't stuck on a boat in the middle of a lake so he could bring her home and get on with his heartbreak. You know, it's getting late. Maybe we oughta...
Shh!
He listened quietly for a moment. What's the matter?
Something's in the water.
He looked about. Probably a fish? I've heard some lakes have them.
Not a fish. Paddling. Someone else is out here.
Jeff moved astern and knelt on the padded bench to peer out into the darkness, while Cindy slid into the captain's chair and switched on the spotlight again. She pulled it from the bracket and pivoted about to shine the beam over his head and across the water. There, he said, pointing to a shimmering object slowly approaching from the south.
I see it.
Cindy zeroed the beam on the object, revealing the dark hull of a canoe.
Hello?
They heard nothing from the canoe but the lapping of a paddle cutting through the water. Only after she repeated her salutation did a response come forth.
Hello?
Who are you? What do you want? A long moment passed as the canoe drew closer. Finally, the voice asked,
"Do you have any clippers? My partner caught a fishhook in his ear."
Jeff retreated to the swivel chairs. "I don't like it. Let's get out of here." Cindy shook her head.
"They need our help."
He grabbed her wrist as she started to leave. "We don't even know who they are." She jerked her hand away.
"Don't be so paranoid. Throw them a line when they get close enough. I'll get the toolbox."
She released the spotlight handle and ducked inside the cabin as the light beam listed into the sky. "At least start the engine," Jeff suggested, but to no avail. He knelt on her chair and grabbed the spotlight handle, swiveling its bracket about to aim the beam off the port quarter. The canoe steadily advanced, the rider in front facing away and huddled under a blanket that shielded his features from scrutiny. The paddler was barely more distinguishable, with the collar of his jacket flipped up and the visor of a camouflage cap pulled low upon his brow. He steered the canoe directly toward the motorboat, alternating the paddle from left to right with skill. Jeff eyed them warily. A happenstance encounter at night with strangers on a secluded lake smacked of trouble. But maybe Cindy was right. Maybe he was being paranoid. After all, they'd only been out on the lake for about an hour. So if anyone had wanted to follow them, finding a canoe quickly enough to rendezvous with the motorboat in the middle of the lake seemed pretty implausible. Unless, of course, they found one hanging on the wall of an open boathouse. He released the spotlight and zipped up his vest against the breeze before stepping astern for a closer view. The canoe was visible in the moonlight now, but its color was not yet discernible. "Stop there! Show me your faces!" The paddler pulled his oar out of the water, letting the canoe glide silently toward the motorboat.
"We just need those clippers and we'll be on our way."
Jeff glanced back to the cabin for Cindy, but she was still below deck. "Don't come any closer. I have a gun." The front rider sat upright and nodded to the driver, who resumed paddling in fervent strokes that jostled his hat from his head. The canoe rocked from side to side as the rider stood up to let the blanket slide off his shoulders, exposing wavy locks of black hair that fell upon the collar of his maroon tornado jacket. He turned about to face Jeff with his thick brows converging on his dark, scowling eyes. A clear bottle of amber liquid clenched in his hand, its neck plugged by a saturated strip of white cloth.
"You got a gun, Hollister?"
Curly said.
"I got a bomb."
Jeff stumbled back and fell onto the deck between the swivel chairs. "Cindy, get out here, now!" The light of a thousand stars was suddenly dwarfed by the flame of Curly's lighter as he lit the wick of the Molotov cocktail.
"Easy, JJ. Don't rock the boat."
JJ ceased his paddling, gliding the canoe off the port side of the motorboat, while Jeff clambered into the captain's chair and frantically groped for the keychain still dangling from the ignition switch. Before he could turn the switch, however, Curly pitched the flaming bottle on a low, swift trajectory. It smashed against the base of the chair behind Jeff's feet. The chair shielded him from the flying glass, but a flood of fire surged across the deck in a brilliant flash of light and heat. Burning gasoline splashed up the legs of his jeans as he climbed onto the seat of the chair. "Cindy, help!" She ran out of the cabin and screamed at the spectacle.
"I'll get the fire extinguisher!"
she said before running back inside. "No, don't!" The heat on Jeff's legs quickly grew unbearable, and he staggered backward off the chair, over the starboard gunwale, and into the lake. The water snuffed out his burning jeans, supplanting the pain on his legs with the paralyzing shock of an unexpected plunge into a cold November lake. Struggling against the weight of his wet clothes, he resurfaced near the bow beside the hull hidden from the canoe, gulping for air against the constricting muscles in his chest. "Cindy!" He swam back from the hull for a better line of sight. Flames now engulfed most of the cockpit, blocking her exit from the cabin. Inside the cabin, Cindy pulled the fire extinguisher from a bracket and turned about to fight the fire, only to see the wall of flames awaiting her at the cabin entrance. She backed into the front compartment of the cuddy cabin and cranked open the skylight cover, but it only opened halfway, offering fresh air but no escape. Grabbing the extinguisher with both hands, she stood on her toes and bashed the skylight cover out of its frame, launching it over the gunwale and into the water. She pushed the extinguisher through the hole and clung to its hose as she wriggled through. But the hose slipped through her fingers, and the extinguisher slid down the hull to hang upon the portside rail. She pulled her legs free from the hatchway and slid down the hull after it, planting the heels of her sneakers against the rail as she reached down to retrieve it.
"Faster!"
Curly bellowed from the bow of the canoe. JJ paddled recklessly, bouncing the canoe off the hull of the motorboat, while Curly jabbed the blade of a second oar at Cindy's midriff.
"Get away from me!"
She held the extinguisher out to defend herself as she spotted Jeff floundering in his wet clothing at the tip of the bow.
"Jeff, help!"
Curly pointed at Jeff.
"Get Hollister!"
He stepped to the very front of the canoe and raised the oar in the air, while JJ continued to scrape the canoe forward along the cuddy's hull.
"Leave him alone!"
She pulled the pin from the handle of the extinguisher and fired a blast of powder into JJ's face.
"Duh!"
He shrieked and dropped his oar into the water as he instinctively reached up to clear his face. Curly spun about and slashed his oar at her, swatting the back of her hand with the flat side of the blade. She screamed and dropped the extinguisher over the rail and into the lake.
"Get it, Jeff!"
Jeff dove beneath the surface and groped in vain for the extinguisher as it vanished into deeper waters. Then he rose again with the hull of the canoe directly overhead. Clenching his teeth in anger, he burst through the surface with all his fury, grasping the metal lip of the canoe and thrusting it downward to the utter surprise of its two occupants. Curly's oar flew into the air as he tumbled backward into the lake, but Jeff maintained a stranglehold on the rim, pushing the canoe ever downward. JJ clawed at the hull of the motorboat in a desperate attempt to stabilize the canoe, but his feeble grip was no match for Jeff's powerful grasp. So he slid toward the low side of the canoe as it began to fill with water. He kicked at Jeff from 5 feet away.
"I'll get you, Hollister."
Jeff grabbed the front seat of the canoe and flipped the boat over with a roar, dumping JJ into cold water with the capsized canoe on top of him. With their assailants momentarily neutralized, he dove beneath the hull to resurface on the starboard side. The entire cabin of the boat was now engulfed in flames, as Cindy stood at the center of the bow, staring dumbfounded at the sight of the burning craft and the plume of smoke rolling skyward. Jeff treaded water.
"Jump, Cindy!"
"What about the boat?"
"It's too far gone. Hurry!"
Cindy glanced back at the two tornadoes, regrouping beside the capsized canoe before diving headfirst into the lake. Her momentum carried her underwater past Jeff, and when she broke the surface, she continued in powerful strokes that left him far behind. He slogged after her, his wet jeans and sneakers weighing down his tired legs, as he swam the 100 yards to the sandy beach beneath the cliff wall. Exhausted, he crawled out of the water and onto the sand before staggering to his feet. She stepped up to him, scowling and shivering as she squeezed the water out of her saffron sweater. He gazed up at her with his hands on his knees.
"I guess I could have used that life jacket after all."
She slapped his face so hard he fell back onto the sand.
"Liar! You'll never change! Just look at my father's boat, Jeff! Look at it! How am I supposed to explain that?"
Jeff ran his tongue across his molars to make sure they were still in place. He brushed sand from his wet clothes as he sat up.
"I had nothing to do with it."
"You have everything to do with it! It's all one big mess, and you're right in the middle of it. And you know what's really sad? Deep down inside, you enjoy it."
He rose to his feet and reached out for her.
"That's not true, Cindy.
She backed away.
"No, don't touch me. Just get out of my life. I never want to see you again."
"Don't be ridiculous. At least let me take you home."
"I'll stay at Shannon's. You just stay away from me, Jeff Hollister."
She darted off to the right side of the beach, where the perimeter path jutted into the deepening foliage. With a rustle of leaves, she was gone. Jeff ran to the edge of the path.
"Cindy, wait! It's not safe!"
Cindy paid no heed as she stormed down the perimeter path, muttering and cursing to herself. The sight of the burning motorboat to her right fueled her anger. But as the flames dwindled, so did her rage. Traveling the dark and rugged path, in quest of the faraway cottages on the southern shore, she came upon a large oak tree, splitting the path in two, with the second trail disappearing over a hill into the woods to her left. Resting by the tree, she held her breath to concentrate on the sound of rustling brush somewhere behind her.
"Jeff?"
she said meekly. The moonlight had given way to advancing clouds, but in the dim light, she could see a teenage boy emerging on the path behind her. As the boy approached, she saw that he was not wearing a green vest, but rather a maroon jacket. She gasped and retreated to the perimeter path, only to confront a second figure in a tornado jacket approaching from the opposite direction. Frantic, she turned about and ran past the oak tree for the secondary path.
"Get her!"
Curly growled as he met JJ at the tree. Shortly down the inland path, she met the gate of a chain-link fence secured by a rusty padlock. She turned about and cowered against the fence at the sight of JJ and Curly approaching her, the latter brandishing his revolver.
"Don't scream,"
he warned her.
"Where's Hollister?"
We split up. He left."
Curly pointed the gun at her stomach.
"That's bad for you."
He stepped closer and shook the fence with his free hand.
"Climb over,"
he told JJ before waving the revolver at Cindy.
"She's gonna follow you."
"What about Hollister?"
JJ asked.
"I'm tired of chasing him. We're gonna make him come to us."
Jeff trudged in the opposite direction along the well-worn perimeter path, his waterlogged sneakers squishing with every step he took. The chilly breeze gnawed at his skin as the first cottages of the western shore came into view, but a deeper chill ran inside him, a crushing sentiment that all had been lost. The odds of convincing Cindy to come with him had not been strong, but he never anticipated such a final and painful break. Of all the blows he had endured since Train's death, her rejection was the bitterest. "You want me out of your life? You got it," he said out loud as if she was standing right in front of him. A shrill siren pierced the night as a rescue craft sped across the water toward the smoldering boat. Jeff surmised that Cindy had reached Shannon's house and called the police, and he hoped she wouldn't be so spiteful as to disclose the location of his car. He arrived at the Wellis property 20 minutes later and scaled the sloping cottage yard to the gravel driveway, relieved to discover that the Camaro had not been vandalized and that he had not lost his keys in the lake. Inside the gym bag in the back seat, he found dry underwear and a dark t-shirt, along with the backup sneakers he had been mindful enough to bring. After stripping naked beneath the waning moonlight, he quickly redressed and threw all his wet clothes into the trunk, except for the green nylon vest, which was already almost dry. He tossed the vest inside the Camaro, all the while eyeing the edges of the surrounding foliage for Curly's truck. Lastly, he pulled out a gray hooded sweatshirt with Salisbury High printed on the front, pushing his arms through the sleeves and pulling it over his head before stuffing the gym bag into the back seat again. Moments later, he followed the swath of the Camaro's high beams as they cut through the inky darkness, down the winding cottage driveway, and on to Portland Village Road back toward Salisbury. Aimlessly traveling the lonely roads of Portland, he mulled over the downward spiral that his life had taken and wondered how much lower it could possibly sink. With little money and even less gas, California seemed as unattainable to him as the moon overhead. And the thought occurred to him that there might be a simpler solution. A thick tree on the property ahead beckoned him along a different path, and with tearful eyes, he pressed the gas pedal down and steered the Camaro onto the shoulder, taking dead aim for the tree trunk near the edge of the road. "No!" he shouted. He jerked the steering wheel back to the left, less than 10 feet away from the willow tree, and its low branches scraped along the hood of the car as it ruggedly bounced off the curb and onto the main road again. He braked the car to a halt and glared at the tree in his rearview mirror before scowling at the reflection of his face. "You're Jeff Hollister," he told himself. "You'll find a way." He drew a deep breath and exhaled slowly before driving with trembling hands down the dark road again. Self-reliance might not save him forever, but if it kept him alive for one more day, then perhaps he might discover a new pathway to follow. Already he had a plan, another source of money that he'd almost forgotten about. The plan required a return to Hurricane territory, and it wouldn't work until morning. So he turned the Camaro onto the vacant country roads between Portland and Salisbury, searching for an isolated spot where he could park his car and spend one more night in town.